You're supposed to try just to sort of say when I hit Long Beach, you know, and start kind of from there. I started in Venice at that time, as you know.
Well, where were you born?
I was born in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. I was born on the Palisades of the Cedar River. And I'm the only member of my family on both sides that was ever in the oil business. So they were Iowa farmers and the doctors and lawyers, you know, and that's uncles I'm talking about now. So I, at 7 years of age, my family moved to Oklahoma City. And my dad was postmaster of Oklahoma City during Taft's administration, which goes way back. And so when I graduated from high school, I went to Oklahoma A&M College, Stillwater, Oklahoma. And I didn't graduate from there. I was taking stock judging and agriculture course. And my best grade was judging stock. And even today, as I go down the road, if I see a horse or a cow, I'll judge that thing before I get by somewhere or other. And I do it. It's still marked on me there. And of course, I've had horses as a hobby for many years. And so that's all the benefit I actually got, I suppose, from that college education. And then before I was married, I went up to Iowa and worked on an uncle's farm and the same thing and down the south somewhere. And so when I quit college then, my dad being postmaster of Oklahoma City, he wanted me to work there. And he got me in the registered mail division, which I had cared nothing about. And I read in the paper where the Magnord Chrome Company, which is was then the Standard Oil Company at the headquarters at Dallas. They drilled a Wildcat well, got oil, about 14 miles from Duncan, Oklahoma. And that's where the headquarters and has always been for the Halliburton Oil Wells Mining Company, which is still in business. And their headquarters was always and is still, I think, Duncan, Oklahoma. That's a big plant there. So I went down there. I told my dad I felt I'd like to get in the oil business. And so I got on the train, went down there, and I was the people that drilled the well, they were from West Virginia. They were, I don't know whether they were drilling contractors or actually Magnolia people. But I was the first man they hired when I went down there, and of course I knew nothing about the oil business. And so I stayed there then for and several years, I think four or five, and I was lease foreman and different pretty good little oil field jobs there with it. And then I decided I wanted to go to California. And so I came to California, got here during the Santa Fe Springs boom, started Signal Hill. And a big depression came in 1924, and like got everybody. And by that time I was in business for myself, and I had what we call an acid bottle service, which is just take a 7/8 inch board of health culture tube and a little hydrofluoric acid and put it in there and drop it down an oil well and what we call a go devil and it land on top of the bit and we let it set 15 minutes and that would then etch a line on that bottle. And then as the driller came out of the hole to put on a fresh bit, all this movement and wearing round and round and all this business. It was never still enough to etch anymore. It just, and so when he got out and he took this bottle out, this container, low-level we called it, there was that etched line. Water always goes level if the tube down there was on an angle and the water in it was level, and I could read that angle, that would tell me how crooked the oil well was at that point. And it's a rather crude thing, and I wasn't the originator of an acid bottle, but I was the first one that ever go to service around that, where I had men go out and put these on drilling wells, you know, and in a special way, you know, and our men would come and pick them up and take them in, and engineers would calibrate the angle and all, and I had quite a little business there, and that was the beginning of directional drilling, really. And as far as I was concerned, now I'm not the first one that ever ran an acid bottle, but I was the first one that ever had made a service out of it, where it's benefit to, you know, a little bit of scientific angle to it, really. So then I built, invented what we called Eastman Single Shot Oil Well Survey Instrument. And it was photographic, and we lowered this single shot down on a wire line down in the well at the bottom and take a picture. We had a we had a time, so it'd come on a time. We knew it'd be 15 minutes when we got down where we wanted to take it, and we'd allow a couple of minutes to be on the safe side, and everything was still, and that thing would take a picture of a plumb bob and the compass, which made it possible to actually survey. Now, because if you had a transit and was out here, you're going to survey a highway or a railroad, well, these transits that they use and look to, well, that's exactly what they're doing. They're reading the compass, and they're figuring the angle of turn anyway. And that's the way they would lay out highways or anything. Well, by using this instrument, then I was able to actually get the same result as they did on the surface with the transit with this oil well survey instruments, we called it at that time. And I had that patent, which is one of the best I ever owned, because it really opened the door for folks to know where the bottom of the well actually was. But then, of course, the big thing came then, it was crooked and they didn't like it. What are they going to do now? So that's when they had somewhere back east, they somebody ran a wedge down the bottom of the well to deflect it, you know, and make it hit that and go off on the side. And I'm thinking now, let's see, go off on the side. Yes. And that would change the direction of the hole. Now, the first time they did all this was only the sidetrack junk. They had no direction or anything like that in mind. But with that whipstock, they called it. And the reason they called it whipstock was that these farmers back in West Virginia is drilling these wells. They remember they were only a few hundred feet deep. And everybody at that time is... If they had a horse and wagon or something, they'd probably get out and get an oil business in West Virginia somehow. Well, so they was in there, the drilling crew was in there getting ready to put one of these wedges in the hole, and some farmer came along and stopped and says, "What's that thing you got there? What does that do? What is that? What do you call it?" Well, this fellow says, "I guess it's a whipstock," because the only thing he knew is with a buggy or carriage or anything, they always had a whip in their hands, you know, and when they wanted to use it, they'd put it in a holder on the dashboard, and that had an angle to it on it. And to this day, that name whipstock is everybody, you know, in the oil business knows something about it. And they don't use that so much anymore. They've got more sophisticated ways of doing these things, but we're talking about that, the early times. Well, on this whipstock, I figured, if we could just put a collar on the top of that thing, weld it on there somehow, that run your drill pipe through that, the bit being larger, you know, we'd have to run it through this collar on this whipstock and make up a bit which is larger than the inside of that collar. So when they drilled the waves and pulled up, the bit, but hit that collar and pull the whole thing out of the hole. So there we were. We had changed the direction. We surveyed it in, that footstalk, actually, by use of transits and so forth, oriented drill pipe. Well, we were getting where we could go down and change the direction of a hole any direction we wanted with that with those two things, the whipstock and the survey instrument. So that is that's where directional drilling first started. And the biggest place that was in use was at that time was in Signal Hill. In fact, for instance, the first well that I ever directly surveyed was between Huntington Beach and Long Beach. And if you go down the highway today, you'll see all these pumping wells down there. I drilled every one of them, or our engineers. We didn't drill them, actually, but we had engineers on there control the direction of those wells, and that is where all that offshore work really began. And that roughly now is how I went in business and how this great art today, I had a patent on that for a while, naturally, but it expired. But I used to have, you know, a few wells was being done this way, why I had the monopoly to do it for a while. Of course, after a while, they got ways around that. So that to me is anybody that's interested in Long Beach and oil back in the early days and how it happened. The greatest thing of all, according to me, when I'm biased, was when we invented oil well surveying and controlled directional drilling. Because then, and a year or so later, when we was going along, there's a well down in Texas that got away from them and blew up and caught on fire, and the Abercrombie well at Conroe, Texas, and the Humble Oil Company, which is a Standard company, when that well was down there and got away from them, why, it just put more than 1,000 barrels a day right out on the ground. And when you have a situation like that, well, that pulls all the pressure, the gas pressure, it dissipates, just like when you, or anything like that, if you open up and let the gas escape, the pressure goes down. Well, that was ruining this oil field, this well. So Mr. John Suman of the Humble Oil and Gas, which is a big Texas standard company, still operates under that name in the Gulf Coast. Well, he got John Suman, the number one man down there in the Houston district. Now, he called me on the phone and wanted to know if I could go down there and help him with that well. And so I told him that I'd come down and talk to him about it, and I did. I didn't know at that time, you know, how I could help them. But when we got down there thinking about it, we saw that if we could get off 200 or 300 feet from that wild well, you know, and drill another well, maybe we could, having a survey as they did of the well, knew where the bottom was. And with the directional drilling equipment that I had, we actually did. We went about 200 feet, I believe it was, and drilled another well. Well, by carefully drilling it, going down straight for 1,000 feet, and then turn it gradually at an angle, always keeping it headed for that bottom of that hole, we got the well drilled. Now then, the first thing we had to do then was be careful and how we could cement it. So what we did, we cemented we call it relief well. We put a plug in this well, wooden plug, and then we ran cement on top of this plug, and then we got the hole full then. Why, then we drilled that cement, that wooden plug out, and put the big pumps that they use in oil well cementing, all the pads and still do. It was over 1,000 pounds pressure we put on this hole full of cement, and we broke into the wild well. And then the pressure dropped, and when we got to, we filled that hole, wild well. We had filled that all full of cement, and we kept everything quiet there for 2 days till the cement settled, good and solid. And that killed, in the meantime, the minute we got that cement in there, killed that wild well. It died down. And then after the cement set, there it was forever dead, because the wild well was full of cement from top to bottom. Then Humble said to me, he says, well, what are we going to do with this relief well? So we drilled the bottom of it and brought in a 1,000-barrel well. Now that's the first, after that, we put out several wild fires that way in cratered wells. And the big trouble now in Mexico, as you know, with the wild well down there, is if they had been good enough engineers to have had a survey of the well before it blew out, of course, if they'd done it right, it wouldn't have blown out in the first place. And so they couldn't use my method of putting out a fire, nor could they use Red Adair's method, which is the great man for putting out oil field fires, because his way is much cheaper than my way. So that gets you there where we got our first great publicity. And Long Beach, instead of me now operating out of Long Beach, of course, everybody down there wanted a well directionally drilled. For some reason or other, they wanted to drill out under a lake or a bayou or something, and we suddenly was in business in the Gulf Coast. And from that, why, we went on until we had operations all around the world. And then today, the Eastman Whipstock Company, they bought, which is Petrolane, of Long Beach still. Petrolane bought out Eastman when I retired. And the world headquarters for Eastman today, Eastman Whipstock, they call it, of all, here goes that Whipstock again. Why, what I'm trying to say is that even today, at the world headquarters, this great Eastman company, the originator and all, now operate all over the world. And you must know that more than half of all the wells drilled on Earth today are directionally drilled for one reason or another. All this offshore work, they have to drill them directionally because they have to go out to where the oil is, and they can't. These islands in Long Beach, some of them have 40 wells under each island. You want to remember every one of them is directionally drilled, and they moved the bottoms out and spaced them just like they should for good production and today. And what they're doing now is, and have in mind, they're doing fabulous things in their way of producing oil out of these offshore, mountainous, any kind of places. And I believe that gives you a little bit of an idea how this all started. And I've just talked at random here. You've been kind enough not to bother me. And if you've got anything you'd like to add to what I've just said, I'll be happy to talk to you.
When did you come to San Jose Springs?
1924.
So oil had already been discovered in the
Pacific? Yes, it had been.
And
see, they had. The oil had been discovered, and the field was being developed. But my acid bottle business at the start began. Everybody used to think that any time you build an oil well, it's going straight down. But it isn't true. Sometimes the bottom of it would be 2,000 feet off to one side, and it'd be clear out of the oil field. And that used to be, we couldn't imagine why a good oil well on three sides of us, and yet this was producing under the salt water. And that's when we first realized that, you know, wells were all this straight. And when they found that out, they wanted to know how straight their well was, and that's really the beginning of all this.
Did you start the acid bottle company in Santa Fe Springs or in Signal Hill?
Right here. I operated, and the company still does. Its headquarters is Long Beach.
But you started out in Signal Hill?
Yes.
And how did you get this idea? I mean, if you weren't educated as an engineer, apparently, or anything, how did...
Well, my job in the when I first went to work for Magnolia Petroleum Company, I was what we call lease foreman, and they had a nickname down there, farm boss, you know, and they'd take certain areas, and if all the wells on that would be under the jurisdiction of one person, and he would work with the drilling crews that would come in, but after the drilling crews are gone, then there's the wells that we have to produce. And that's what I was, the production superintendent, actually. But being that I had all these problems, and I was in my early 20s then, I have always been of a curious nature and inventive. I have, I think, 18 or 20 patents, that most of them have made me a little money. That's the reason why when I got in here with this acid bottle service. Why, it wasn't enough. It was crude. And then I said, we've got to change it. Now that's where your need comes into a picture. And that's the way I did it. Now I had to do this photographically. And I was down on the pike one night. And I saw down there a stand of a place where you could go in and sit down on a little chair, and they'd take your picture, and it'd come out in a metal ring, and that was the picture, exactly the same size that I wanted.
John?
And I got, yes.
There is a few minutes. Ward's office just called, and he stopped with Dr. Grumman, and he wants you to go over there and see him.
Okay.
Can I call Dr. Grumman?
Please do.
Huh?
Please do. Okay, I'm sorry about that. But that, you see, that, you say, well, now why, how could you do that? You're not an engineer. But I worked only engineers, always had engineers working for me. And I never had any problem because I was, you might say, self-educated on this. I'd fallen to. And I've had pretty good engineering people work for me. And I never had any problem with them because in my particular end of it, I knew more about it than they did because I had the practical experience of the oil field, which an average engineer knows nothing about. Maybe that gives you some little idea on that.
So you started thinking about this by watching them drill wells?
Well, I worked on the wells.
Did you work on
it? We ran this acid bottle service, you know, and we were on that well two times a day. We'd come out and load up the equipment. I could go ahead and tell you exactly how he did it technically, but it wouldn't be particularly of interest to you. But I was on there and setting up this test. They had to drop down the drill pipe when he came out to change bits. And I had these special go-devils with springs on them where I could drop it down the drill pipe until they hit the bit on bottom. And we do that just before they came out of the hole to put a fresh bit on. So that they just break the top joint off. I drop the go-devil down in there, and when it got out, we take it out and take the acid bottle out and wash it out. So we then we take it in, and the engineers would compute that angle. And it was done by reading anybody interested Well, we get a signed card. We drop a piece of Kodak print paper around the acid bottle. It's, remember, 7/8 inch in diameter. Hold it tight and put it down and expose the edge of it to bright light, edge of the tube. And that would, the light would go down and hit this acid bottle etching and deflect, and we'd get a sine curve on the paper, which we could read with a caliper, with well, just read it, you know, with a yardstick, only you happen to be in 100 graduations.
Yeah.
And that way, while we, on the back of the things we had, the name of the company, the number of the well, and at what depth they ran that bottle. There you are, right in business.
What a wonderful idea. How did you...
Well, that's my contribution to directional drilling. The whole thing is just step by step. The acid bottle told them but how many degrees off the well was the bottom. They said, that's too much. What can we do? Well, you can plug it up and drill it again, but that's terribly expensive. Oh, maybe we can do this, and they had different ideas. And then they got messing around with this crookstalk idea. And they were cementing them in, and at 2,000 feet they'd set one to change the direction. And then they drilled another 1,000 feet, so that crookstalk is still cemented in up at 2,000 feet, and the well's now 3,000. Well, as they're going back and forth with their bits, they knocked those things off and junked the well. And that happened all the time. So something had to be done. And that's where a young man by the name of, well, I'll tell you just a minute. He and I invented the whipstock, the removable whipstock. He had the idea first, and he'd come up to my place, you know, and we'd sit down and talk about it. And how could we get them made, and how could we do it? So he was a tool pusher, they call them, on a well on Signal Hill. And the owner of it was during the Depression. And the owner of it let us run this whipstock in his drilling well. Because I was giving him free survey service, which he had to have, and he didn't have any money either. So that's the reason, that's where I got him to get permission to do that. McVicker, Harold McVicker was this fellow's name. And I paid him many thousands of dollars royalty because I paid. I paid him the way we did this royalty was that I was half owner of the patent for that time. And we had a finished tool and we got to run it in this oil well, you know, the drilling well. And so I paid him many thousands of dollars royalty on, and it was 10% actually that he got, and I got, and it's mine to run. And but every time we ran one, he got his 10%. So he came out real well with it, too. But now, what I told you is absolutely accurate and correct. There's no, I have not tried to be coy, I have not tried to be holding back on anything. To the best of my knowledge and belief, what I have told you is a story of how all this started. And remembering again, it all started on Signal Hill. Hastings, McVicker lived on Signal Hill. I lived on Signal Hill. Long Beach, we're talking about. And my office has always been there. We still have one here in town after all these years. And so that's the story and how it started.
Okay, in 1924.
Now then, we have, if you want to go on dates.
Yeah.
It's possible for me to, I have the records here, you'd have to dig them out, and it's a shame that I haven't kept an accurate record of it, But I thank God I've saved enough stuff that it's possible to get a pretty good idea of what happened.
Okay, well, let's try to get an order. You started the company that serviced the acid bottle.
I started, it wasn't a company. It was H. John Eastman Limited. That's the way we sold it. It was me. And that's all that time, you know. My first office was on Long Beach Boulevard, American Avenue, and Willow, about 2300 block, I believe. That's the first time there's ever a directional drilling company in the world. I operated the first years of my business with H. John Eastman Limited. That limited means I incorporated.
But you started out as being the only person who went out and serviced the acid bottles.
Well, I had the people by that time to help me. It wasn't any time at all until we started running these things because it was a business. We had to buy acid bottles. There's Board of Health culture tubes. We get them at a hospital supply, and the picture slugs we got down there. And one of the first men I hired was two of them. One of them was an engineer, and the other was a watchmaker. So that's the way we started.
What
did
you
need a watchmaker for? All these survey instruments are intricate instruments, and I couldn't buy them. I had to make them. Each one of them is a story in itself. I had to put a compass and a plumb bob and a timing element, clocks, pictures that come on. Take a picture at a certain minute so we could get this stuff down there in place and let it be still, nothing moving around. We get a picture, bring it out of the hole, and that's like setting the transit up down the road someplace. And we develop that picture. And there we had everything it took. We knew the depth, we knew the angle, we knew the direction, and that's surveying.
But with an acid bottle, all you knew was the depth and the direction.
The angle. Depth and angle, that's
you
right.
You know what? Was there any way to figure out which way?
Yes, the Eastman single shot. That's the
well,
one.
Well, I mean, before
it. No, there's no other way. There was two. Of course, now then, as we develop, going along now, changing a little bit, I came off on another angle, and at that time, the time we got started on this thing, and people had begun to say, well, we got to survey these oil wells. Well, there's probably 10 companies sprung up that had a way of surveying an oil well. And one of them was really got out about the same time I did, was Alexander Anderson from Fullerton. And the records around will show where he was. And I later bought him out because he didn't have any compass. He wouldn't use a compass because he said the steel in the well would influence the compass. But there's a way to get around that, and that's part of my contribution there. And so he never did. And the minute that he only oriented the drill pipe, keeping track of how much it turned as it went down the hole, and computing all that to find out actually what direction it was at the bottom. Now that was, I used that too for setting tools. For instance, how can you set a footstock down in the direction you want it to be? We had to do that same thing as Alexander Anderson used to survey, just get the survey. And he had mechanics where it would, lights would come on and turn off, and I had the same thing. And we call those multiple shot oil well survey instruments. Well, a multiple shot means that you, a single shot is what it says. It goes down and takes one picture. And that's all you need when you're drilling a well each day. And it must be so foolproof that the driller himself could run that thing and take the picture. We had all this in the kit box, and you should see the way we developed those things. It is quite ingenious, if I do say so. And because we had to develop the pictures, and we had to do all these things on a rig. Well, a drilling crew, they're not noted for being photographers. So it had to be actually foolproof, and we'd get one man on each tower, you know, that could do it and teach them. Of course, many of them, wanted me to send a man out and take care of these pictures and be responsible for that. And that's where one of the big sidelights of the business. So, to go back to this multi-shot survey instrument, we'd go out there and we'd start, the well was finished. And before they put casing in it, so our compass would work, why then we'd go down at every 100-foot depth, we'd stop and take, and that machine would take a picture. Because they took a picture every so many minutes, it was taking those pictures. But we had to keep a record of depths separately. I'm getting complicated now with it, so maybe I better stop. But in any case, I'd stop at certain intervals down there, taking those pictures with that multiple shot. That is exactly the way you'd survey a railroad, because at certain given stations, all part of the computation, we were able to survey that with our instrument, just like we would if it was laying up on top of the ground. So the single shot, now remember, its purpose in the it was to get that picture as they're drilling, and between each time they came out with it and put on a fresh bit, we would take that picture. Maybe it'd be 18 feet from the last one, maybe it'd be 120 feet, but we knew exactly how much. We kept track of all that. All right, that's the single shot. Now then comes the multiple shot. Folks said, we're going to re-drill that well over here. We didn't think it was a good enough well. We want to get a survey. So we go out and survey it for them. It's like I tell you, it's a multiple shot. And there they have a complete picture right there. The bottom is so many feet here, and this way, and at such and such an angle, going such a way. And our multiple shot then became accepted by the courts. Where an Eastman survey, for instance, and an Anderson survey, those are the only two I know for sure, that the courts would accept our survey.
Yeah, I was thinking that since there was a lot of town, a lot of drilling on Signal Hill.
Oh, yes.
That you must have been involved in litigation.
Not me, because
I wasn't
the first. Now, that first well I drilled, the first well that we ever actually drilled was this well down at Huntington Beach, but on the edge of the old field down there. Just where a signal, it was actually, I guess, pretty near in the city limits of Seal Beach. No, I mean Huntington Beach. And that's where this first well was. We drove down, we went under the highway, a town lot drilling, underneath the street, underneath somebody else's property, on out under the highway, under the Pacific Electric Railroad that had an interurban running, out under the beach, into the ocean. I was sued, and so was the other fellows, the oil company that I worked for.
Which oil company?
Well, it's McVicker and others, you know. It's just a little town lot deal. So we were all sued by the Standard Oil Company and the State Highway Department, the Pacific Electric Railroad, and the offshore, the beaches, you know, and all that. all those big people, and I woke up one morning being sued for all of them when we brought that well in. And they knew it in because all the other wells in that area were dead. And here this well down there was just pumping. You know, that's pretty, as I look back on it, like, I just don't know how I ever got through there. Poor little Okie, you know.
I know about that.
Well, no, you know, I'm not saying that in any way except it's true.
Yeah, I agree.
It's actually true about these things. And that, I'm being frank with you now. Everything I'm telling you is the truth to the best of my knowledge and belief. And you haven't been able to read much about it because I've never been one that... First time, a lot of it is more or less secret with us. And we advertised in publicity and did this and that and the other, but down to the pure old important things, we were really cagey about putting that information out if we didn't have to. And that's where we've always been. Another thing, too, when you go out and work on a well for the Shell Oil Company, no matter what you do to that well, that is their well. They've hired you to do it. And you must never tell the man next door what you've been doing. If we had it, we'd been out of business that quick. Many a time, I've surveyed an oil well and knew where the oil was when the company itself hadn't yet known. We had complaints. Another thing I've got in my records, I can show you when that thing first happened. Everybody on the hill wanted to get out and drill an oil well on somebody's lot and get over under the Shell's lease. Well, you know, that would be suicide for me. And so I right quick put out a full page ad in the oil papers. We would never drill... have anything to do with the drilling of the well after it left the property line. I had to work for them up to their property line, and sometimes it wasn't a good thing because if they could get that thing going that way, then they could get there and pour the coal to it and maybe it'd carry right on through under Shell anyway. But I couldn't tell anybody, you know, that they couldn't drill but so deep. But I could say that I won't work when you leave that property line. And that's the way it always was and still is.
Yeah, but were you employed? You said you weren't involved in litigation, but I mean, you weren't a litigant, but you must have been called in by the court.
Of course. And, oh yes, I've been sued for lots of things.
But and on Signal Hill, you must have been called in by the court to say, you know, which one of these wells is the one that really should have the oil?
Yes, that's right. Well, the Eastman Company did. I mean, but we had our own lawyers and everything else to handle that. We had good lawyers, too, for the time, and their names were all known in Long Beach. They're all gone now.
Did you work with some of the people that were prominent lawyers in Long Beach?
Well, I hired them.
Like who?
Or shouldn't I ask? No, you should, but I can't at this minute tell you. It's so long ago, and what I'm saying to you, I'm trying to know that it's right.
Okay, so I'm confused about what you did first. The first acid bottle service was on Signal Hill, but you tried out, but the first removable, where did you use the first removable whipstock then?
I told you that they began using whipstocks to hit people on the hill.
Yeah.
And they'd take anything to make a wedge and run it down and at the bottom of the hole and get loose from it, you know, knock it loose, and then go back in a bit carefully and try to drill off of it. Now, that was getting to be rather general practice. But as I tell you, that you'd settle these things every 500 feet, and the first thing you knew, you had four or five of those things cemented in the hole, you might say. You're going in and out with a drill pipe every day, you're going to knock some of those off. And if you do, you junk your well. And that's the reason why we Well, we just had indefinite removal of salt. They invented